Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Muskies Matters with Lakeland University head football coach Colin Bruton. Muskies Matters is a weekly program that gives you, the fans, the opportunity to ask the Lakeland coach questions about the Muskies, football or sports in general, or just seek the coach's wisdom about life events. In this week's episode, the coach discusses what he expects against Kalamazoo College this week. He tells us a little bit about what he thinks the NAC needs to do to become an elite conference in D3 football. And Coach Bruton ranks his four favorite cheeses. Let's join Muskies Matters. Well, let's welcome back Coach Bruton. Coach, do you have any team updates for us?
Not a whole lot. Just we're getting ready for Saturday. Obviously, an overnight trip to Kalamazoo and a really quality opponent. And we're excited. We're looking forward to it. And just kind of making those final preparations with restaurants and hotels and travel itineraries and class dismissals and all that fun stuff that you sign up for when you're a coach at our level.
Well, you're coming off of your bye week, so what was kind of the focus for you and the coaching staff during this time?
Yeah, a lot of it's just been fundamental work. You know, we're trying to get better, really taking a lot of time last week especially to review the Carroll film, and we made a ton of mistakes in that game and had a ton of areas that we can get better, and really focusing on that, focusing on us, and just the fundamental things, the techniques that we need to improve. So that's been a big focus, and then obviously this week, looking a little bit more at Kalamazoo and getting into the game plan and the scouting reports and things like that, and just making sure we shore things up. You know, it's a bye week, I think, is always a time to get healthy, first and foremost, and then obviously it's a week that you really focus on you and your team, so that's what we've been doing.
This week you take on Kalamazoo, a fairly interesting matchup for your team, I think. So what are your thoughts on this contest?
Yeah, they're a good program. They're a team that started off 7-0 last year. 1-1 so far this year, but a quality opponent. You know, it's their home opener, so we're expecting them to be really ready to play and excited about that. It's a team that's very good defensively, very, very good defensive line. Probably the strength of their team is their defensive front. Got an all-conference nose tackle back. Got a couple defense ends that are really nice players. Then offensively, they're a team that hasn't really hit its stride yet this year, For us, you know, they're going to be very disciplined, I think. That's something we need to correct. We got to play more discipline. And then they're going to probably, take away some of our big plays offensively. So we're going to have to be patient offensively. And, we feel like we have some matchups that we like on both sides of the ball. But we just got to make sure we're ready to play. So I think Kalamazoo is going to be ready to play. And I expect them to play better than what we've seen on film so far from them.
They have a young quarterback in Nico Nixon, who's thrown 6 interceptions this season. You have a young secondary, so I'm wondering if are you kind of leaning on them this week to come up with that big play just because their quarterback has seemed like he's been a little more cavalier with the ball, let's say.
Yeah, 6 picks in 2 games is a lot. You know, watching the Greenville film, which is the film we have, a couple of those interceptions weren't necessarily his fault, had some miscommunication with some receivers and stuff like that. But I think we are going to have some opportunities in the secondary to make some plays. The biggest thing for us, though, is, getting them in those situations, those pass situations. And, I imagine that with a quarterback that's thrown 6 picks, they may come out and try to establish a run game early. We got to win first down and win the line of scrimmage and then get them into some situations where, we can try to pressure the quarterback and hopefully force them into some bad decisions. But, I think, obviously, he's a kid that I'm assuming their coach, they're expecting to play better, and we got to make sure that he doesn't.
Now, you talked a little bit about their defensive line, but it looks like you have a little bit bigger of an advantage in terms of the size and kind of talent level of your offensive line. Is this a week that you really look to try to kind of run Larry Rivers and let him just kind of batter them down?
Yeah, we're at the point now that with Larry, we kind of expect every week to be a big week. He's that special player, and we have a ton of confidence in our offensive line. We think it's a real strength in our program right now and a really good unit. Like I said, we got some size up front. They're playing some guys that are a little bit more undersized, so we're going to have some size advantages, but it's a really good defensive front for Kalamazoo. I think they do a good job. They got 2 outside linebackers that really get in the fit and disrupt some things. And, it's a 3-4 scheme, so it's a little different scheme than we've seen. We're a 4-man front, so our offensive line in practice has seen a lot of 4-man front, and Carroll played a lot of 4-man front against us, so it's a little different scheme. But it's a good front. But we expect to be able to run the ball, and we expect Larry. We're at the point that we're expecting him to put up big numbers, and he's going to get his carries. Dez is going to get his touches in the backfield, and know, as we've said numerous times, those two guys are pretty special, and we expect them to make plays.
Well, let's head to fan questions, and we start with Leo, who says, no offense to Tez at all, but was Michael Whitley just that great? Is it harder to win because he was so good?
I think Mike was great. There's no doubt about it. You know, second team All-American and obviously put up great numbers and did a lot of special things. And he made it, I'd say this, that Whit made it easier to win because he could hide some holes and he, you know, at times just made plays and did some things. The one thing I'll say, though, is Tez is coming along. He had a pretty good week against Carroll. He's had two really good weeks of practices, and it's just starting to click for him now. And I think you're going to see him take off here in the next couple weeks. You know, I'm really, really happy with where we are at the quarterback position right now, and I think you're going to see him put up some big numbers as a passer and a runner. I think he's really close to kind of taking that jump, and it's one of the things that really excites us about where we are as a program right now is I think he's going to take that next step.
We have a couple of questions from Bill. The first is, would it ever interest you to see Lakeland move to a different conference to gain better recognition?
Yeah, I think, I don't know. I haven't really given that a ton of thought. I think we're surrounded by some really good leagues, the CCIW, the Wisconsin State League, and we're surrounded by just some really good football. And I don't know if it strategically makes sense to move leagues when you talk about travel, when you talk about location. And then you're also talking about, you know, the other 18 sports that we have here at Lakeland, and, you know, you make that decision together. So I don't know if that makes a ton of sense to move leagues. I feel like the NAC, we're in a pretty good place, and the NAC through 2 weeks has had two pretty good weeks, and you're seeing some teams that, you know, we have three teams right now that are 2-0 in the league, Aurora, Eureka, and CUW, and we got some teams that are getting better. I think it's going to be a really competitive league this year, and I think you're going to see some teams that towards the end of the year are going to start getting more national recognition than we're used to in the NAC.
Bill would also like to know, do you think that there will be a point where the NAC becomes one of the top three or four conferences in D3?
Yeah, I think we're probably a ways away from that from a football standpoint. You know, there's some other sports where the NAC has been a little bit more competitive. You know, Benedictine and men's basketball was the national runners-up. CUW's been in the College World Series, you know, the top eight in the country a couple times in the last few years. So there's some sports where we're definitely closer to the top. I think in football, it's tough. Like I said, we're kind of in a geographic area with some schools that have some just significant advantages with the Wisconsin State League. There's some programs that have just, you know, really good traditions with some of the CCIW programs and things like that. And I think the NAC from a facilities and resources standpoint isn't quite probably at the same level those leagues. So I think, you know, being a top three or four league is probably a really ambitious goal. But I think you're seeing the league, like I said, we're making strides as a conference, and I think you're going to see the league be more competitive. I think we this weekend we go play the MIAA, the Michigan Conference, and I expect us to be competitive, more competitive than we've been the last couple of years. I think there's some really interesting matchups between teams. But I think you'll see us be competitive with the Midwest Conference and with some of the other leagues that are more geographically local to us. I think there's teams that are making strides. I think our league is probably better than it's been, maybe in 4 or 5 years this year. So that's exciting.
I'm putting the over-under on this question at 4. So Ronnie says, during the season, what's the average amount of sleep you get a night?
You know, we sleep pretty good. I think we joke a lot. You know, there's coaches that work. They're in the office 100 hours a week or 90 hours a week. It's not our staff. You know, I think if you're game planning 100 hours a week, you're probably doing things the wrong way. To me, it's kind of silly that coaches do that. And I think some of it is this badge of honor that, you know, you say you're in the office till midnight, and you're probably not working very smart. So we're sleeping okay. You know, we generally get home after practice. We end practice about 6. You know, generally we're out of the office as a staff by about 7. We'll meet after practice and just talk about things and talk about the next day. And then we get in the morning and we're reviewing practice film and doing what everybody else is doing. But you know, I think sometimes we equate with working more hours with better results or being a better coach. And I think it's really faulty logic. It's not something we subscribe to. You know, we don't meet as a staff at all on Sundays. Something I think has been really good just to allow us to recharge. I go back to, we ask our players, you know, we tell our players the importance of sleep and the importance of rest. And, you know, 7 to 8 hours a night being really important. And I think to not model that as coaches doesn't make a whole lot of sense. So I think that's changing. I think you're seeing a lot more staff that are kind of following that model. You know, they're spending time with their family during the season and things like that, and they're getting coaches out of the office, and I think it's a really good shift in our profession.
I got to say I'm a little surprised because I thought young family, wife who wants your time, plus coaching, 4 or 5 hours would probably be a max for you, but that's good to hear. Yeah. Good to hear your
system. Absolutely. Our kids are still young enough that they're going to sleep. You know, they're generally 8 or 8:30, they're in bed, and you know, generally I'm sleeping from, you know, 10 to 6 or something like that, or 11 to 7 or something like that, so it's not too bad, not too bad.
Well, good for you. Sandy would like to know, who is the greatest player you ever coached?
Yeah, there's been a lot of good ones. We've gone through probably about 6 months ago and kind of picked our, you know, since I've been at Lakeland, it's year 13 for me, kind of who the all-time Lakeland team is in 13 years, and we've coached a lot of really good players. Obviously, you know, we've talked a lot about Witt and how special he was, and Kevo Smith, you know, as a wide receiver, you know, has set every school record here, and, you know, was in mini camp with the Vikings, and probably the guy that was closest to being an NFL-type talent. And I really think a kid that was talented enough to play at that level, he's probably the most talented kid I've ever coached, just a special athlete. We've had some really good defensive players. John Wagner, my first couple years as a linebacker. Keith Woodson as a corner. Tony Fowler as a safety. You know, we can go through the list, and there's been some really special players here. It's hard to pick just one, but I'd probably say Kiesel was the most talented. He was the kid that day in and day out was the kid that didn't fit in. You know, he was the kid that if you came out to practice, you'd watch him do something and say, like, that's not a kid that should be at a D3 school. And it was pretty regular with him. So I'd probably say Kiesel Smith, but I can make arguments for several others.
Sandy would also like to know, has there ever been a kicker you have had on your team that you felt could hit a game-winning field goal automatic within 40 yards?
Probably not automatic. It's a great luxury to have. We've had some kids that we felt throughout the years we felt confident in, you know, that had the leg from 40 in, but to say automatic, no, we haven't had that kid. And I think that guy is hard to find at our level. You know, there's not that many kids that can do it consistently, you know, at the D3 level. You know, Andrew Cowley's got the leg. Our kicker currently has got the leg from 40 in. He's got the leg. You know, he's made from 50 in practice before, and he's got a really nice, strong leg. For him, it's just getting a little more consistent, and he's been working on that. He's had a really good week of practice, so I've been excited. I think the bye week was good for him. Some rest time was good for him. The ball's kind of bouncing off his foot again like it was early in camp. But it's hard to find that kid. It's hard to find a kid that you know, has the leg and the consistency from 40 in, but then also the kid that can handle the pressure of that moment. You know, when everything's on the line and you got to go out and make a 35-yarder, it becomes a little tougher kick than it is in practice.
Next up we have Andy, who says, just kind of a coaching philosophy question, do you have a set of criteria of when you decide to go for two?
Yeah, I mean, some of it's just obviously math. You're looking at the chart and you're trying to figure out, you know, time and score and that stuff. We want to be aggressive, so we're probably more willing to go for two than some other programs. You know, if we feel like we got an advantage and we can make something happen, you know, we're going to try to go for two. I think you look at, you hope that your extra point is you feel 100% certain you're going to make it. You know, we haven't been that way many years where we felt 100% certain we're going to make it, but, you know, maybe we felt 80 or 90%, and then you're weighing, you know, what do you think your chances are of getting a two-point conversion? You know, so we're fairly aggressive with it, and it kind of depends game to game and kind of game flow, time and score and all that. There's not really a set chart you're using unless it's late in the game where you're saying, okay, we're down two, obviously we're going to go for two, or, you know, we scored to go up one, so we want to make it a three-point game, things like that.
Chris would like to know, he says, with how competitive you and the coaching staff are, do you guys play fantasy football against each other?
We don't. You know, I think most of us are in a fantasy football league, or we do some fantasy football stuff, and it's fun to do, but we don't do a ton of fantasy football between the staff, and we probably should. We probably could get a pretty good league going, and got some guys that know a lot about football. Coach Trefke is an expert on like early '90s NFL players, so if you want to know about Chris Chandler or Steve Berline or just random NFL guys, he's your guy. So he'd probably be a pretty good fantasy guy just because he's kind of like the NFL reference book for some of these guys with stats and things like that. So he was the guy that had a box of baseball cards or football cards and was reading the back and memorizing stats and stuff like that. So we got some guys that are obviously really competitive. We got some guys that are really knowledgeable, but we have not done the fantasy football thing.
Chris, I'd also like to know which guy on the coaching staff looks the best.
Wow, that's a tough one. I'll probably, Coach Tresky's a pretty good-looking guy. Keeps himself in good shape. He's got the haircut and the chiseled look. So I would say probably Coach Tresky would get the first vote from most. I'll go Coach Tresky. I'm not going to give too many more comments on that one. I'm just going to leave it at that.
Samuel says, they talk about how some head coaches get all into feelings when members of their staff get jobs elsewhere. Does that bother you?
You want guys to do his best for themselves. Everybody except for Coach Wallman, when he left to go to Aurora a couple years ago, he was dead to me. So I no longer talk to him. But I'm joking. Coach Wallman, I know, listens to the podcast, so I'm sure he'll get that. But you want guys to move on. You want guys, especially when they're climbing the ladder, they're getting coordinator jobs, or they're looking at head coaching jobs. And I'm going to encourage our staff, if there's an opportunity that makes sense for them and their family, we want them to pursue it, and we're going to try to do everything we can to help them get the position. And the thing I think you want to do as a head coach is you want to create an environment where guys don't feel like they want to leave, where they feel like they're valued, where they feel like they're enjoying their time. And then when guys do have opportunities, like I said, we want to help them do anything we can to help them, get the next job. If it makes sense for them and it's the right place for their family. And there's so much of this that sometimes I think as coaches we look at these things purely, from the job standpoint. And there's so many other factors with family and location and salaries and things like that might make a job more appealing for somebody else. And I think if that's the case, you hope that the coach has a good enough relationship that they want to come talk to you about it. And we've had that situation. And Coach Wellman's kind of the one. When he left to go to Aurora, we were in constant communication, and I knew that he was, looking at other opportunities, and he was traveling about an hour every day to work to Lakeland. His wife was a basketball coach at Lawrence University in Appleton, so he was traveling from Appleton every day, and that hour drive was really draining on him. And he had an opportunity to make some more money and just kind of expand his network, and that was something he was looking for. So, I'll tell him, we're in a text chain, and I still talk to him, very regularly, a couple times a week at a minimum. But, we wish him the best, and obviously when we played him, we were hoping we were going to beat him and all that stuff, and we had some fun with it. But we wish him the best, and I think anybody's got to look out for their family and for themselves and do what's best for them.
Doug would like to know if you think that it is fair that the Heisman Trophy never goes to a defensive player.
It's probably not fair, but it's just life. It's one of those things where you can try to fight it, but it's not going to happen anymore. It pretty much is going to go to a quarterback, and those are the guys that put up the numbers. And I think, I think there's probably some merit to saying the quarterback is the most valuable player. It's probably the player that impacts the game the most from that position, so I get it. But I think there's been some really special defensive players, too, that probably deserve a little more consideration. It's just not going to happen, and they probably should just rename the award the top quarterback or the top offensive player, because I think it's going to be a long time coming if we ever see another defensive player win the Heisman.
Elaine says, Coach, I am disappointed to hear that you won't tutor students in history. I think you would be great at that. How perfect would it be if you were the Muskie Minutemen? You would be ready to answer any history question, anytime, anywhere, at any moment.
Sure. I guess that's an accurate statement. I don't know. I'm just going to go with sure. I guess we can try to integrate that and go from there. But sure, Muskie Minutemen, let's go.
We have a few questions for you for Tyler. The first is, what is the best Nicholas Sparks novel and why?
Again, I'm going to give a shout out to Coach Wellman for the questions. I appreciate it. But Nicholas Sparks, I'm going to go. A lot of people will say The Notebook. That's kind of the the easy choice. Not a huge fan of the Notebook. I think it's a little overrated. Not a bad book or not a bad movie. And I'm speaking more, I guess, towards the movies than the books. But not my number one. My number one is probably Safe Haven. And then I'm going The Longest Ride, number two. You know, Nicholas Sparks, you know, he does a nice job. The wife wants to watch some of his movies, and I'd be lying if I said I don't enjoy some of them. But I'm gonna go those two, number one. Safe Haven, number one. Longest Ride, number two.
He also says minivan versus crossover vehicle, which is better? Excuse me.
I'm part of the minivan mafia, so we got the Chrysler Pacifica, number one ranked minivan in America. I'm willing to die on that cross with the, you know, people want to dog out minivans, but we're getting similar features, we're getting better storage capabilities, and I think it's just a roomier fit. So I'm going to go minivan. If anybody wants to debate that, I'd be happy to debate that. But yeah, we're going to go minivan here.
He says, Larry Rivers is a dynamic player for you guys. What is your favorite river, either foreign or domestic?
I think you got to look at the Mississippi. You know, it's kind of the great river in America. You know, it kind of becomes a natural east-west barrier for our country. And I'm going to go Mississippi, number one river. You know, people talk about some of the other rivers, the Nile or the Amazon, and I'm gonna stay domestic. I'm gonna stay in the U.S. and stay in Mississippi.
Now here's a big one. He would like you to rank your four favorite cheeses.
Yeah, you know I'm a fan of kind of the white cheeses. So I'm gonna go mozzarella number one. I like a good provolone on a burger, so I'm gonna go provolone number two. I'll go Swiss number three. And then the fourth one. I'm going to stick with those three. I'll go American number four, just to be patriotic.
Good choice. Gary would like to know, are you a guy who eats the crust off your sandwich? Did you eat it when you were a kid?
Yeah, I'll eat the crust. You know, I'm not one of those guys. Our kids, they know that they're eating the crust on the sandwich. We're not cutting the crust off or anything like that in the peanut butter and jelly. You're going to eat the crust, so... I don't get it. You know, I think crust gets a bad name. I like the crust pieces on a pizza. I like the crust on a sandwich. I'm not going there. Eat the crust. Stop giving crust a bad name.
Now we get to the main part of the show. First is Wes, who says, I read somewhere that it takes 11 good things to be said about someone for them to erase one bad thing that was said. Could you even think of 11 good things to say about Rob? I bet it's hard.
Wes is just a hater out there, you know. Wes is a hater. A lot of good things to say about Rob. You know, the hard part would be to find one bad thing to say about Rob. But that'd be the challenge. I'd be canceling out, trying to cancel out one bad thing that I don't have to say. So really easy. I don't know where Wes is from or what his story is, but you know, Wes needs a hug, I think. Stop being a hater, Wes.
That leads us to Lacey, who said, you said you were a kind of a BSer. Does that mean when you said Rob was a good guy a couple of years ago that you were really just shoveling some crap?
Lacey, maybe Lacey and Wes are married. Not sure what the situation is here, but again, we got another hater. I said before, core value number one in our program is honesty. And I would not ever say anything about Rob that wasn't 100% true. Rob's a great guy. We've enjoyed doing the podcast the last couple of years and getting to know him. I don't know what you've done, Rob, and you got all these haters out here. But I think these people, like I said, I think they need a hug. We got to give Wes and Lacey a hug. If you're out there, maybe hug each other. Find some love, and it's all good.
I think they're jealous because I get to talk to the coolest coach in the country. I think that's what it is. So, you know, a little jealous.
Lacey, if you got a podcast, hit me up. We can do another one. Let me know what's going on.
And why is it good to be a Muskie?
It's always great to be a Muskie. I say it every week, but we're looking forward to a trip, a chance for our team to come together, spend some time together. Heading to Kalamazoo, it's going to be a really competitive football game, and got an opportunity to get our first win and kind of right the ship a little bit. So we're excited about that. We're just excited about, you know, the opportunity to spend time together and grow as a program, grow as a team, and get to know each other a little better. It should be a really fun weekend for us. The weather sounds like it's going to be great in Kalamazoo, and we're just excited about a chance to play another game.
Awesome. Thanks for joining us this week, Coach.
All right, Rob, really appreciate it.
We want to thank Coach Bruton for joining us on Muskies Matters this week. If you have your own questions you'd like to ask the Lakeland coach, please send them to us at ColinBruton@MinorLeagueSportsSupport.com. That's ColinBruton@MinorLeagueSportsSupport.com. Please have your questions to us by Tuesday evening so we can give the coach a little time to review them before we record the show. I'm Rob Pannier, the managing editor of the Minor League Sports Support, and we'll see you next time on the Muskies Matters.